Welcome to A Call to Lead at LifeScience.org, where we explore the leadership journeys facing life science entrepreneurs. I'm David Kirk, and in each episode, I sit down with a life science leader to uncover the moments that define their leadership. My guest this week.
So my name is Evencia Sanchez-Mejías. I'm the CEO and co-founder of Integra Therapeutics. And Integra is a preclinical stage biotech company based in Barcelona. We do technology development around advanced gene editing to bring new therapeutic solutions for patients with rare diseases, oncology, and autoimmune diseases.
We're grateful at LifeScience.org to have a community of over 400 life science CEOs, leaders driving change in biotech, medtech, tech bio, and healthcare. The conversations inside our community, stories of conviction, navigating challenges, and making bold decisions inspire us every week. Now we're sharing them with the world. Evencia, thank you so much for joining me. So you are very well traveled as a scientist. You got your PhD in your native Spain. You postdoced in Singapore. You spent 4 years in Miami, Florida. I am jealous. And you came back to Barcelona. You were, again, a researcher for many years, and now co-founder and CEO of Integra. Tell me, what triggered that move out of nice, safe academia where you can see the world and move into business?
Very good question. And I don't know how safe academia can be for an early stage career scientist. So I think the academic research path train us to be entrepreneurs. So that was also a given. And in my case, when I came back to Spain, I started as a senior scientist in an academic lab. But my mentor there, Mark Will, was coming from Harvard, being already a bioentrepreneur exposed to biotech companies in Boston. He participated in the creation of eGenesis, a company that came from the York Charge Lab that does genome engineering of pigs to get access to organs that are biocompatible with humans. So it was an academic setting, but my boss at the time was already thinking about doing technology transfer from the academia to the industry. So that allowed us to start this project on gene writing tools to fill a gap that the society actually had to have safer gene editing tools that allowed for more flexible and capable advanced therapy products. And once we had this working prototype, we were quite excited about the breakthrough in the field. We were the first one bringing programmable transposases to be able to write full therapeutic messages into the DNA of the patient. And we started socializing this idea with the local investors and the local ecosystem here in Barcelona, which is growing. And I'm quite excited to be part of this ecosystem for the last 5-6 years. It has been a tremendous amount of change and growth in Barcelona. So it was very obvious that if we wanted this breakthrough in the academic lab to see the patients in the future, we needed to start a company, a private entity, to secure funding to a different level of what you can get in the academic setting. And we started to think about the potential business plan, how the business model will look like, how much funding we will need, what will be the strategic focus. And I was the senior scientist leading this project under the umbrella of the bigger lab. And it was a quite natural transition from scientist to now businesswoman. And I had several years to prepare for this. So it was an easy decision. If we wanted this to be applicable to patients, that was the path. And I roll my sleeves and start doing the work to see this as a reality in the future.
I love what you said about how academia kind of prepares you for leadership in a way and entrepreneurship. Tell me, when did it When did it click with you on your career path that you wanted to lead something? I'm not sure whether you knew at the time whether it was going to be a company or your own research group, but when did leadership feel like this was the path for you?
I think for in academia, you're trained in a way that you learn from your leader. It's like an artship, actually. So okay. you learn from your mentor side by side, and the plan forward is to keep learning and prepare yourself and be the future leader for the next generation of scientists. So this is it's already how you train and how you prepare for your future career in science. And in my case, because of this need of having to accelerate the development of therapeutic products in the private industry as a biopharmaceutical or a spin-off from the academic lab, then it was a different kind of management. We still do a lot of science and development, but there is another component to the management that we need to bring. So it was pretty natural. The click to transition from academia to industry was because of this specific need with Integra, but I don't regret it. I'm very happy with the change. And in the future, I will see myself as trying to make these breakthroughs available to society and doing more translational development.
And on your journey, and as we've mentioned, you've seen Asia, you've seen America, you've seen Europe. Very interesting, different cultures, I think, to be working in. Did you come across any obstacles or perhaps personal challenges that you had to overcome on your road to leadership?
Yeah, I think being exposed to these different cultures and being outside of your comfort zone, so moving across the globe, very far away from your family and your social support, and having to start this over several times, because even Barcelona is not my hometown. So this is already a challenge that prepares you for what's to come. And it really builds resilience within you and being ready to face different kind of challenges. It also prepares you for embracing diversity in the teams. So the culture in Europe, it's not as different as the culture in US. I don't know, but this was more than 10 years ago, so I don't know about now. But it's certainly very different to the culture in Asia. So you have to adapt to the different norms, the way people are comfortable interacting, and the way things are done in different settings. And that also prepares you for diversity in Europe as well, because not every member of the team is the same. And that really prepares you for being a leader. But challenges, I think being far away from home, different time zone, having to start over and all the nuances that comes with starting a new life in a city while pushing forward your career. So these things are tough, but the humans are very resilient and they can adapt to many different circumstances. So this also teaches you that you're capable of overcoming things that maybe at the beginning you didn't know it was possible. Yeah, I think there are always learnings that you can bring to other settings, and leadership is one of those.
So looking back on your early days as a CEO, was there any particular challenge that stood out for you?
Yeah, thinking about the early days, I think the toughest was the uncertainty of whether or not this is going to even happen at the end. So securing the funding and preparing for the growth without the certainty of if you're going to be able to secure the funding. I think that like managing uncertainties was the toughest one. There was a plan A, B, and C, and I don't know, maybe even D. So you have to really prepare for the unknown and hope for the best. Also, my first board meeting was the first board meeting that I ever attended. So I had no benchmark. And this is very difficult to train as a scientist. We are not prepared for this. So then reporting to the board of directors, aligning all the expectations and being able to execute on the strategic plan that was set at the board level, especially in the early days, was also a big adjustment of the way that we usually execute on projects in the academic settings. So I think those were the main two that I didn't anticipate, and then I find myself having to learn as I go.
As a first-time CEO coming into this world, this is something to be mindful of. And looking at the community of other life science leaders like yourself, what challenges do you think you share most with them?
I think most of them are shared challenges, and I have been very lucky with the ecosystem in Barcelona, as I mentioned, having great formal and informal mentors that were generous enough to share their own experiences. And now we even have entrepreneurs that have successfully exited their first company and returned into the ecosystem. So as I mentioned, I have been very lucky to be able to chat with many of them. And I see that it's very common struggles that we encounter. So access to financing, securing the financing, reporting, especially when those are public non-dilutive funding, which is great for the company. But then you have to report back and meet all the regulatory norms for the different entities. I retaining the talent and managing the team, it's also one of the challenges that we usually encounter. So being able to have a cohesive team that all push towards the same goal, it's also something that gives you some headaches and sleepless nights. So those are mainly the ones that we share.
When it comes to managing the team, how are you finding that as a first-time CEO? Is it similar to how you would manage people in academia, or is it a completely different world?
Maybe not completely different, but there are some differences. I like this part of the job and finding this very fulfilling, and being able to select and recruit my own team, because sometimes in academia, the team is a given. And in the case of Integra, I have been able to select the team, and this is completely different when the team is a given. And there are some things in common to academia, especially for the R&D side, because it's relatively similar a structure with more seniority. This is also much better for the industrial side. In the academia, there is a part of the mission of the academic lab to train the next generation of scientists. And this is also something that we do at Integra. We have some industrial PhD candidates that we also train, and they collaborate with us to develop the next generation of gene and cell therapies that we are building. But for the most part, it's a very well-trained team with years of experience, also experience in industry settings. So this it's very beneficial for the speed and the execution of the different projects. But then there is also the expectations management, and there is a career growth plan that maybe it's not as clearly defined in academia, and in industry, you have to be able to secure the growth of the team and align the expectations of everyone to what it's possible within the corporation.
A topic that kind of comes up that doesn't come up frequently for me, because I'm in this position of interviewing leaders in life science around Europe, it's no secret that men very much outnumber women. And it came up in our prep call that this was a topic that was on your mind. I would love to hear, what are your experiences as a female leader in Europe right now?
Yeah, and there is a big support from the government, especially the European government, but also the local government here in Spain and in Catalonia. So there is an awareness of this gender gap. And then there are different initiatives to try to bridge this gap. The ones that I find more powerful are the ones that brings community together, especially spaces of woman leaders only having special programs and trainings to try to prepare us and be aware of these differences and be able to close this gap. But there are many others, especially the ones that give visibility to the great woman leaders in the space. So we can serve also as models for the next generation. And I think part of this gap is due to the lack of role models. When I was growing up and being early stage career professional, so there was no models, and then you don't see yourself. It's tougher to get to those powerful positions and have the seat in the table and be the decision maker. But then I think we are making the path and walking this road to have this not as prevalent as it is today. And then there are some things that is probably some challenges that are based on personality and the way that women are raised compared to men. It's sometimes it's difficult, more difficult to us to be aware of how important it is to have your voice and your point raised and heard. And I think for us, it's a bigger of an effort compared to our male peers. So you have to be conscious and then speak up more than you're naturally prone to speak. And then seek this peer support. It's also a great tool. So then there is, as leaders, we have some challenges. And then as woman leaders, there is a different set of challenges, some in common, but some are quite particular. And I find these peer support groups very, very powerful to then advance and have this gap less and less. And I think in Europe, the situation is quite critical. But then, especially in Barcelona, it's the percentage of women CEOs, it's surprisingly higher. So I also feel very fortunate to be part of this local ecosystem.
No, that's great to hear. We're very big on that peer-to-peer learning where people can get together and share their thoughts and their challenges. But I'd love to know from you, and you've mentioned this already, that in science, we learn from our mentors as we go through our careers. What valuable lesson have you learned from a colleague or a peer that you could never have learned in formal education?
Wow, that's a great question. I have to think and reflect. There are more than one lesson. Probably one of the things that I learned by talking to other peers is this management of the board and how to execute board meetings in a way that is helpful for the company and give you clarity for executing the strategy. So that was a big part, and no one teaches you about that at all. So it's very difficult to learn this in informal training, and this was one of the most valuable things that I learned from peers. And I think also on the team management as well, because this is quite particular, and there is always someone that has encountered the same challenge that you're facing. And this could be how to incentivize the team and have your incentive plan in place. What are the standards, how you can work around these things. So some of these team management skills, they are also difficult to learn, and peer-to-peer support is a great way to find inspiration and good tricks to learn on how to.
And before we talk about Integra now in detail, you have this perspective of again, having researched in Asia, having worked in the US. What do you find particularly exciting or inspiring about European life sciences today for leaders like yourself?
Yeah. This, I think Europe is now in a great moment to really push this innovation forward and become a global leader. I think access to talent, it's better and better each year because there are more European talent across the globe that want to come back. And this is a great opportunity to be in Europe. There is institutional support, and this is quite different from other parts of the world, including US, when I was there doing the postdoc, but also today. So we have to make the most of this institutional support. And this is not always monetary, it can be in other forms. And there are many different programs and resources that we can access in Europe. So I think that's great. And also the infrastructure, it's getting more and more ready for the kind of resources and capacities that we need for this kind of companies that do research and development around preclinical and clinical products. So I think there are several things that are getting momentum in Europe. Also the maturity of the funds that invest in life sciences and innovation. We are seeing bigger funds that are deploying capital within Europe. And that's also a great opportunity to be in Europe today.
And you've talked about Barcelona a couple of times, and you know, we hear it from our members as well, these whispers of, you know, great things coming out of Barcelona. What's particularly magical about there? And not just the weather, you know, tell us what's particularly magical about the ecosystem in Barcelona.
I think it's the size and the density of what's going on in here. So I think many years ago, it was mostly the academic institutions and the hospitals doing research and innovation. And now this is matched also with the number of companies, consultancy firms, key suppliers, and investors. So I think in Spain, this is quite unique. Madrid doesn't have this amount of key players in the whole value chain that are present in the same place. And I think this is great to accelerate innovation.
And now let's talk about Integra. You've teased a little bit of it already at the introduction, but I'd love to hear, what is the great unmet need that you are facing with Integra, and why is now the time to face it?
Mm-hmm. So at Integra, we have specialized in doing large pieces of gene editing. So you can edit just a couple nucleotides in the DNA, just a few letters, if you wish, of the DNA code. And this can already solve some diseases, and you can make a great deal for some indications and a subset of the patients. But then when you need to modify a large piece of the DNA, this becomes limiting. So at Integra, we have specialized in doing these large pieces, integration in a way that is safe for the patient, that you can simplify the way that you manufacture these cell therapies, for example. You can control the output of this process and have a more homogeneous cell product. So this is where we have specialized, and this can address some unmet medical need in terms of making CAR T cells available to a wider spectrum of patients going outside of oncology, in which you cannot afford certain risk that this technology has at the moment, that for oncology patient, it's tolerated. But then if you're thinking about pediatric population for non-oncological indications, you need safer solutions and safer technology. Also for indication in which the causal gene, it's relatively large, cystic fibrosis, Duchenne dystrophy. So these indications that are quite prevalent, although they are rare diseases, but highly prevalent rare diseases in which the part of the DNA that needs to be addressed is bigger than what the current technology was able to do. And the moment is now. So we have seen these gene writing companies popping up every couple months. So I think the delivery technology is mature enough for being able to address these issues. And the third generation of gene editing tools, it's also ready at the moment to start dreaming about these future therapeutic solutions that are becoming reality now.
You've mentioned a couple of indications there, cystic fibrosis and Duchenne's. What else are you looking at? Because I'm fascinated by this technology.
Yeah, another part, it's rare indications for the hearing loss or visual impairment. And some of these indications also have a large causal gene that will be difficult to address with the second and first generation technologies. Also some metabolic diseases, hemophilias also have large causal genes. So there is a long list of indications in which the causal gene is too long to fit into the current solutions that are already approved in clinic. And this is the avenue. And of course, the next generation of CAR T cells. So we have seen the miracle of CAR-19 and what this has mean for the management of leukemias and lymphomas. But now we want to bring these to solid tumors, for example. And then in solid tumors, there is some more technology that are needed to get rid of the stroma of the tumor and to have probably more than two targets at the same time. So this next generation of CAR Ts will need larger cargo capabilities, and this is how we can help the field to advance.
And taking a very positive, optimistic view, which we don't always do in Europe, we're realists, but let's take a very positive, optimistic view, imagining that everything works, the results are great, the funding comes through, and it all goes to plan. What impact do you hope to create with Integra? And what does the world look like because you're successful?
Yeah. Wow, this is a great question, and allow me to imagine a brighter future. So the impact will be really on very debilitating diseases with high unmet medical need, patients that don't have cures and are a burden to the public health system, but also the families and the society because of the amount of care that goes into managing these kind of patients and having a single intervention curative treatment for this patient is a complete game changer, because we are not talking about managing the condition, extending the life some years or months. This will be curative treatments for patients that at the moment don't have any solution, and this can be muscular dystrophies as we mentioned, but also hereditary blindnesses, for example. So this will be quite transformative for the patients, but also for the society as a whole.
I'm kind of thinking about cystic fibrosis you mentioned, which is quite prevalent, even though it's a rare disease, in my native Ireland. And mm-hmm. The treatment for that is effectively, you know, you're on medication for your life and then lung transplant, and you're still on medication for the rest of your life. It's incredibly debilitating illness, and it's amazing to think that these technologies are coming.
Yeah, and for sure, the innovation at Integra with the genome writing tool will drive the future products, but then we will need additional innovation regarding the delivery into the lung cells, for example. And we are quite excited to see that this is being solved, and now we have vehicles that are able to target the relevant cells in the lung epithelium to be able to address these indications. So yeah, the future, it has its challenges, because then funding all these developments is not always easy, but the technology it's coming together to be able to think about these solutions.
Wow, that is a lovely positive note to end the podcast on. Thank you again for sharing your time with me. I know how busy you are, but this is your podcast. And as always, I have one more question for you, which is, what have we not discussed that you would like to take the last few minutes of your podcast to talk about?
So maybe thinking on the audience of this podcast and the European leaders in the life sciences sector, one thing that maybe we haven't discussed is the mental load and that we bear. And sometimes it's difficult to separate the person and the project, because sometimes this is our personal projects that then we develop as a company, and how stressful it can be to make this a success that only happen maybe 10, 15, 20% of the time, sadly. And there are some companies that will have to close because of regulatory challenges, funding challenges, even team challenges. So being able to take care of ourselves and how self-care is very important, and being able to find, this can be through peer support, but also safe spaces within your family, your friends, making time for sports or hobbies. In my case, I made a mandatory flamenco class that I can think only on the music and the feet, and
nice,
kind of mindful activities that will allow us to then take care of the team and the project and everything that is needed. So I think, I would like to end with this note and reminder for everyone to work on self-care and being the best possible leaders. It starts also with being kind to yourself.
So that is a wonderful note to end on. Thank you so much, Aventia, for being on the show with me.
Thank you so much for your time and the opportunity.
Everybody knows that Europe is a global leader in generating translational science. We also have world-class leadership talent. To hear the stories, lessons, and experiences of our science leaders, listen to A Call to Lead at LifeScience.org, available on all good podcasting platforms.